Our greatest needs are energy, minerals, other raw materials and food, and most of these come from the countries of Asia, Africa and Latin America. Now even Canada, Australia, New Zealand and Russia are both buying Chinese goods and supplying China with these essentials. Basically, China can regard them as third world countries. It has already reached mutually beneficial currency exchange arrangements with the major trading nations, and the renminbi is now a globally circulating currency on a par with the dollar and the euro. China is already as important an economic entity as the United States, the European Union, and Japan. Its inflation remains at an acceptable level of 7 or 8%, and economic growth has topped 15% 3 years running. Such growth was seen before, during the 30 years of reforms and openness. From 1982 to 1984, China's GDP rose 15% a year, but the total size of the GDP was small. To put it simply, China is now the only locomotive powering global economic growth. No wonder the nations of Asia, Africa, and Latin America want to be close to China, and no wonder people now say that the age of American imperialism is over and the Chinese century has begun. He Dongzhen paused to clear his throat. Old Chen, Little Xi, and Fang Chaodi didn't understand economics, but they were concerned about China and knew, therefore, that they could not ignore the subject. They listened attentively and with narrowed eyes to He Dongzhen's explanations. What rendered them truly speechless was when He Dongzhen turned from economics to a discussion of the international political situation. No matter how badly off the American economy is, the United States is still militarily the strongest nation in the world. Only the armed forces of the United States have the power to strike anywhere in the world. He Dongzhen.
Hey China, baby, you played too rough. You slapped 34 on him, now that ain't love. I gave you till Tuesday to say you're sorry, but guess what, sweetie, that ship sailed early. Don't cry on the trading floor, it's just diplomacy, but hardcore. We talked to some countries, not all. Guess which empire won't get a call. We're a terror fever, turn it up some more. 50 on 34, now we're out on normal floor. Don't need no trade talks, we just do the math. Taking mad sports, baby, feel my wrath. We got that terror fever, shaking every port. Seeking markets like it's a contact sport. Raise it high, spin that tax roulette. If you retaliate, I'll double the bet. Who's next? Oh, don't look shocked. 10% for friendship, consider it doc. We're spreading love like a steel-toed boot. Global harmony in a tailored suit. Every deficit's a dagger to my pride, so I fix it with some duties on the side. Who needs allies when you've got the vibe? Just me, my posts, and my 40 tribe. Yeah, it's terror fever, truth posted loud. Dancing through the trade war, feeling proud. Markets crash, that's just the sound of greatness echoing around. And on a 4%, man, that's how we roll. Every import tax like rock and roll. So grab your goods and say goodbye. We're sanctioning the world tonight.
This isn't a tantrum. It's strategic performance art. We're liberating your exports through your control. And hey, if your economy collapses, that just means I'm working harder.
We've got tariff fever as I'm with the moon. Trade toss canceled, no reply soon. So let's all dance to the price of bread and spin these sanctions till we're dead. Want a 4%? Baby, that's the deal. When feelings are facts and pain is real, we're making history one post at a time. Now hit that beat and tax the rhyme. Hit that beat and tax the rhyme.
This isn't a tantrum, it's strategic performance art. We're liberating your exports from your control. And hey, if your economy collapses, that just means I'm winning harder.
We got the terror fever rising with the moon. Trade talks canceled, no reply soon. So let's all dance to the price of bread and spin these sanctions till we're dead. 1-4%, baby, that's the deal. When feelings are facts and pain is real, we're making history one post at a time. Now hit that beat and tax the rhyme. And tax the rhyme.
Got back into his stride. China cannot, therefore, follow the path taken by the Soviet Union during the Cold War, competing for world hegemony with the United States, conducting an arms race, implementing a balance of terror policy, of mutually assured destruction. No, that is not the way to pacify the world, and not where China's permanent security interests lie. A rational person like He Dongshen, with his deeply concealed Chinese-style idealism, knew that this road was a dead end because China's national power could not support it. To prevent the United States from starting a long-distance war, China has to employ its long-range preemptive or unilateral strike capabilities. To prevent the invasion of its territory and to safeguard its national interests, China has to become a friendly older brother to its regional neighbors and not compete with the United States for world hegemony. To use the language of international discourse, this is China's Monroe Doctrine. American nuclear weapons could destroy China, so it has to make the US understand clearly that China will not wait for them to strike first, but will itself attack. In other words, the United States cannot viciously threaten China with its nuclear weapons because it might provoke China into using nuclear weapons first. That is the essence of China's preemptive first strike strategy. China has only sufficient first strike nuclear capability to destroy Hawaii and a few cities on the west coast of the United States. But that is enough to inflict unacceptable levels of destruction on the Americans. Even if the US counterattack could then produce 100 times more destruction in China, the American people would still regard the damage on their own soil as too high a price to pay. China employs these two threats, preemptive first strike and long-range unilateral attack, to frighten the Americans out of the idea of launching a nuclear war against it. Even the victor in a nuclear war will pay too great a price. This is also a tacit live and die together agreement. China's strategy is open and made perfectly clear to the United States in order to avoid any misunderstanding on their part. At the same time, China has consistently urged the Americans not to establish an anti-missile defense network in the Eastern Pacific, because that would give rise to a Sino-American nuclear arms race and force China to develop intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of breaking through the American anti-missile shield, as well as build nuclear submarines and space-based weapons. He Dongshen didn't believe that nuclear war between the United States and China was likely, and he believed that the probability of the US launching a conventional warfare invasion of Chinese territory was virtually nil, despite the continued presence of the American military throughout East Asia. Historically, he said, the Chinese nation's greatest fear had always been invasion by non-Chinese ethnic groups, the division of China's national territory, and rule by non-Chinese conquerors. Such fears are quite unnecessary now. China's current national defense systems are the strongest they have ever been in the 5,000-year history of the Chinese race. Who would dare invade the Chinese territory today? He asked emphatically. Since the founding of the People's Republic, leaving aside conflicts involving Taiwan, Tibet and Xinjiang, China has had short-term military clashes on its borders with India, the Soviet Union, the former South Vietnam and Vietnam. The only conflict that truly threatened Chinese national security was the resist the United States, assist North Korea conflict of 60 years ago. There are 14 nations with which China has land borders and 6 with adjacent territorial waters. Since 1949, China's already settled 14 land border disputes and 3 offshore island disputes, but there are still some disputes that cannot be settled in the immediate future. These include India's refusal to recognize Chinese ownership of the 38,000 square kilometer Aksai Chin region on the Tibetan Plateau, China's refusal to recognize the 84,000 square kilometer South Tibet region as part of the Arunachal Pradesh province of northeast India, bordering on Tibet and Bhutan. Disputes in the South China Sea between China and each of Vietnam, Singapore, Malaysia, the Philippines and Brunei. Sino-Japanese disputes in the East China Sea, and even with the small Himalayan nation of Bhutan. Furthermore, Chinese plans to build large dams in Tibet and Yunnan to change the river courses there are coming under increasing criticism, and have given rise to heated disputes over transnational water sources because, except for the Ganges, the headwaters of all the major rivers that flow into the countries of South and Southeast Asia are in China's Himalayan region. Still, None of these disputes, or even occasional armed clashes, are very likely to develop into full-scale warfare between China and some other country. He Dongshan knew, of course, that there were elements in the military that didn't like his views because of possible effects on their budgets. Although he didn't agree with the tireless calls by these military interest groups for the government to increase spending on the armed forces, he was not so naive as to imagine that a large nation could rise without the support of military power. He was a realist, and he only wanted to optimize the national interest most effectively without depending on the military to achieve the victory. To do this, it was necessary to consider grand strategy. He believed that if a country claims the moral high ground too much, it will make other countries suspicious. In the past, when China was always proclaiming that it would never seek hegemony and talking about its peaceful rise and a harmonious world order, did other countries believe it? This is a time when other nations worry about China, and so it is a good idea for China to make its national strategic interests perfectly clear so that others will know where to draw the line. That is why China recently put forth the idea of a Chinese Monroe Doctrine. In the 1820s, President Monroe announced that a rising United States didn't intend to contend for hegemony with the great powers of Europe, but that they must not invade any part of the American continent. They especially must not try to colonize parts of Latin America again. The Americas were for the Americans. That was the Monroe Doctrine. Now China has emulated the 19th century United States and announced that it has absolutely no intention of contending with other great powers for global hegemony. But East Asia is for the East Asians, and China has invited the Euro-American great powers, primarily the United States, to leave East Asia. What China means by East Asia also includes Northeast Asia and Southeast Asia, Japan, and all of the nations that were historically part of the Chinese tributary system. During the long period of history when a steppe civilization of northern and western Asia was continually colliding and mixing with a European civilization derived from the Mediterranean area, China was shielded behind the Gobi Desert and high mountain ranges. The self-sufficient Chinese autarky considered itself a tianxia, or all under heaven, a world unto itself with a high level of cultural unity. Perhaps due to geographical reasons, the ancient Chinese Empire didn't have as great a penchant for foreign invasion and expansion as so many other nations over the centuries. Alexander, the Romans, Attila, the Crusaders, the Mongols, Timur, the Ottomans, Napoleon, all the European powers and Japan during the age of exploration and colonization, or the post-Cold War United States of today, with its 850 military bases located all over the world. China, He Dongshan said with force and getting hoarse now, certainly does not want to take on the arduous and thankless task of policing the world, nor does it want to govern other countries. Have you ever heard of the People's Republic of China trying to occupy other people's territory? According to his understanding, the Chinese century is not a century to be enjoyed by China only. The Chinese century means that China has finally regained the rightful historical position that it occupied before the 19th century. The European powers and the United States have to understand China's intentions. It does not want to take over the world. But Europe and the US should not imagine that they can prevent the rise and optimal development of East Asia under Chinese direction. If only the United States would leave East Asia, China, the US, and Europe could maintain their own spheres of influence without mutual interference, and they could all prosper. Replacing a struggle for global hegemony with the regionalization of political influence would guarantee world peace during this period of the unstoppable rise of China. In the economic realm beyond politics, the world is already divided into three regions: the European Union, the North American Free Trade countries, and the Asia-Pacific region. The total internal trade and direct investment within each region is greater than the economic activity between the regions. The European nations' chief trading partners are other European Union nations, and Canada's is the United States, not Japan or China. Starting in 2007, Over half of the trade of Asian countries, excluding the Middle East, but also adding in Australia and New Zealand, has been with other Asian nations. All that remains is to link politics and economics together on the same footing, and you will have regionalization. Then Europe, America and China can do business within their own territories and spheres of influence and can both cooperate and compete on investments and developments in Africa, Asia and Latin America, based always on economic criteria. In Angola, for example, China, France and the United States can all seek offshore oil drilling rights, and the local government will have more choices and not be easily controlled by any one country. The second Iraq war convinced China to invest heavily in Africa. Angola is now China's largest single supplier of oil. Other African nations that supply us with fossil fuels include Sudan, the Republic of the Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Nigeria, Chad, Mauritania, Mali, Niger, Benin and Gabon, while Algeria provides natural gas. Over 30% of our petroleum imports come from Africa, second only to the supply from the Middle East. Besides energy, China is also active in mining and forestry in Africa. Large areas of farmland are under contract to meet Chinese demands. China has also built roads, hospitals, harbours, airports and communication networks. China has always advocated trade, friendship and non-interference in other nations' internal politics, and African leaders welcome this attitude. It's not surprising that our power and influence in Africa will soon surpass that of America, France and Great Britain to become Africa's number one trading partner. In South Asia and the Middle East, China has friendly relations with Iran and has expended a great deal of thought and money on its long-term friend, Pakistan. This is an important strategic national security consideration. To contain America's ally, India, our so-called cold to India, warm to Islam policy, and to protect our oil supply lines, the shortest route for the shipment of African and Middle Eastern oil is by sea or overland to the port of Gwadar in southwest Pakistan, and then north along the Chinese-built Gwadar-Dalbandin Railway to meet up with the Karakoram Highway in China's Xinjiang province. This avoids a long sea journey from Africa or the Middle East and bypasses the Indian Ocean and South China Sea shipping lanes, especially the narrow and busy Straits of Malacca, where the navies of India, the US, Singapore, Thailand, Indonesia, the Philippines, Australia and Japan frequently conduct joint naval exercises. China has also not failed to grab any energy resources that have slipped out of the grasp of other great powers. In 2008, when the price of oil fell from $147 to $33 a barrel, China greatly increased its oil imports from Venezuela and Iran. In 2009, when Russia reneged on its contract and stopped importing natural gas from Turkmenistan, China reached out its helping hand and signed a 30-year contract with Turkmenistan that included building a gas pipeline across Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan all the way to China. The same goes for oil from Kazakhstan. China not only participated in its extraction, but built 3,000 kilometers of oil pipelines. With the exception of Russia and Iran, the nations in the region are all landlocked, and their energy exports have to be shipped through other countries. Therefore, they all support China's ultimate strategic goal in Central Asia, that is, the construction of a pan-Eurasian energy bridge, an oil pipeline from the Middle East through Iran, Russia, Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan to Xinjiang. Today, in its own national interest, China wants to promote regional stability in Africa, the Middle East, Central Asia, Iran and Pakistan. It wants to prevent any manipulation by other great powers and to block the influence of religious extremists, separatists and terrorists who want to undermine or overthrow the governments in those regions. In order to isolate the Xinjiang independent forces, China has offered special friendship to the six stans of Central Asia and to Turkey. Turkey has long been denied entry into the European Union, but China has offered it observer status in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and has given Iran official membership. Most unexpectedly, even Israel has to be friendly towards China, because Israel is afraid that China will export high-tech weaponry, including nuclear weapons, to Islamic countries it is selling sophisticated technology to China. China also did not oppose Russian efforts to counteract American influence in the continental heartland regions of Central Asia, the Caucasus, and the Ukraine. These multi-ethnic nations didn't, however, want to throw themselves back into the Russian embrace. Kazakhstan, for example, has not forgotten the great suffering they endured as a result of Stalin's forced removal policies and on the Soviet collective farms. Uzbekistan was even casting amorous glances towards the US and NATO. All of the Central Asian nations agreed that China had no political ambitions in the region, and so they felt more confident in doing business with China. On the contrary, it was China that didn't want Russia to get the idea that they were trying to muscle in on Russia's sphere of influence. The new foreign policy term for the Chinese and Russian governments was coordinated diplomacy. And that explains why the Chinese provided a huge loan to the small nation of Moldova to the west of the Black Sea, with which China had never had any affiliation. It was to collaborate with the Russians in their effort to prevent Western power from moving east.
Daneben. buy some crack.
If crack is not available, I'll buy gelato. You have to take things as they come, that is my motto. I've laid groundwork for your ultimate demise, but you can't see that when you look into my eyes. I have been fucked over 1,000 times or two, and now I feel that I must take it out on you. And that's the good news, that's the good news, baby. And that's the good news, that's the good news, baby. When you talk to me, I am vomiting inside. I think that vomit is what killed my inner child. When I look at you, I am filled with violent rage. I feel like telling you that you should act your age. All I can talk about is your ineptitude, and how that little act of yours looks just like food. Your taste in clothing is of no concern to me. It's just a reflection of your stupidity.
And that's the good news, that's the good news, baby.
Este is het microfoon van jou, dat is niks. Je bent niet 1, je bent niet 2, je bent niet 3, je bent niet 4.
Het muzikale jaar 2024 is voor ons nu helemaal verdwenen in de mist. Hoog tijd om aan 2025 te beginnen. En om dat te vieren mogen we vanavond tickets weggeven voor Tramhouse en Warm Exit in de Trix. Maar dat is voor straks. Goedenavond en welkom bij Signaalhuis. We starten deze eerste gewone aflevering van het jaar met de nieuwe band The Charm School. Een viertal uit Louisville, Kentucky. Eind deze maand volgt hun debuut-LP genaamd Debt Forever. En daarop staat deze Crime Time van The Charm School.
Taking on a ride. Primetime van Charm School. En zoals we al zeiden, draait deze band rond de zanger-gitariste Andrew Sellers. Sinds zijn tienerjaren is hij al actief in de muziek en begonnen deed hij in de Louisville hardcore scene en later als singer-songwriter onder de naam Andrew Reinhardt. Hij werkte zo ook al samen met onder andere Bonnie Prince Billy. En genre hopping, dat is echt wel zijn ding. Dat bewijst hij dus nu met zijn nieuwe postpunkband Charm School. En van Koude Nevel kennen ze in Stockholm ook iets. En uit die Koude Nevel komt de postpunkband Sadly Sunday. Als vervolg Royal Appointment, hun laatste album dat in 2023 uitkwam, brengen ze binnenkort een nieuwe EP uit. En dit Beneficial Friends zal er zeker ook op staan. Dit is Sadly Sunday.
I'm
sucker, zo zou je de gemiddelde Amerikaanse techbro tegenwoordig beter omschrijven. Maar gelukkig voor ons is het ook de titel van de nieuwe single van Kapoet. En dat experimenteel artrock duo uit Chicago scoort hiermee een hattrick. Het is de derde single die ze uitbrengen en zo komen ze ook voor de derde keer in onze playlist. En dan eentje om in de gaten te houden. Heavy Lungs is een noise rock band met een stevige punk vibe, een kwartet uit Bristol. In april komt hun debuut de Caviar uit bij Fat Cat Records en dat raakte deze week bekend. Ze gaan in die periode ook toeren op het Europese vasteland. Voorlopig is er nog geen Belgische datum, dat mag op basis van deze single wel veranderen voor ons. Dit is het toepasselijke Get Out van Heavy Lungs.
Get out! Get out! I need to get out!
nog een plaatje van vorig jaar dat we toch niet wilden onthouden. Pedigree Pig van Anderson Trio uit Chicago. Ze brachten hun eerste release uit op een klein cassettelabel, maar die is ook gewoon te vinden op Bandcamp. Dit was Blow Mold van Enters. Tramhouse is hier al enkele maanden een hot topic, mede dankzij hun geweldige album The First Exit en hun denderende live reputatie. En als jullie nieuwsgierigheid daarbij geprikkeld werd, dan kunnen we hun show in de Trix aanbevelen. Op 31 januari maken ze Antwerpen onveilig samen met het Brusselse Warm Exit in het voorprogramma. De kerstboom is zijn dennenaalden kwijt, maar daar vinden wij toch nog een cadeautje onder, namelijk enkele gratis duo-tickets voor deze show. Als je er dus wil bij zijn, mail dan naar signaalruis@radioscorpio.be, signaalruis in één woord @radioscorpio.be, en dan doen wij de rest. Dit is Tramhouse met A Necessity.
Try to walk the mouse.
Dit was weer een heerlijk verslavende kosmische krautrock vibe van het Australische Brown Spirits. Beat on Repeat staat op hun nieuwste plaat Cosmic Seeds, het tweede album van Brown Spirits en opnieuw uitgebracht bij Soul Jazz Records. En dan een kleine tip voor de vroegmarkt van volgende week vrijdag. Dan begint het experimentele viertal Openhead uit Kingston namelijk. Dan brengt het experimentele viertal Openhead uit Kingston namelijk een nieuwe plaat What a Success uit. Het Kingston waar zij vandaan komen is niet de hoofdstad van Jamaica, maar een klein stadje op 150 kilometer van New York. Dus verwacht hier geen dub of reggae, maar stevige lappen no-wave, noise en postpunk. Uit die plaat is het Friends Don't Lose van Openhead.